Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the CONCACAF Champions League Review Show.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to the special edition of the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show, CONCACAF Champions League Finals, first leg review show, as the Montreal Impact and Club America finish off this first leg with a 1-1 draw. Ladies and gentlemen, just one of those things that you just have to expect when you're facing these a very, very tough place to play, obviously, for the Montreal Impact, as when you go down to Club America, you got to face not just a tough Club America side, but you also have to face a very, very tough, very, very, very tough Club America crowd, Estadio Azteca, as always. And you know what? 1-1 draw, to me, I think that's a favorable result. Some would like to say Montreal should have had this 1-0. But you know what? 1-1 is not bad at all. At the moment, joining us to discuss this match, John Jagu from Big Soccer, who covers Liga MX and Mexico's national team. And then we'll have Kevin Laramie, who is live from the Estadio Azteca. He'll join us as soon as he's done getting quotes from Frank Klopas, of the Montreal Impact, the manager. John, I think what we can say right now, John, is that Club America, while they got their goal to save themselves in the aggregate, do you think that possibly that second leg victory over Herediano might have held them back? I shouldn't say hold them back, but maybe showing them struggling that we've never thought we'd see Club America struggle like this.
First of all, good evening.
Good evening.
I don't know if that game, if it was like a fool's goal. I mean, they've been struggling in the local league. They got beat for they've had a couple of 4-0 losses while they've been in the CONCACAF Champions most recently this past Saturday against Ronaldinho's club Querétaro, where Ronaldinho had a brace and was given a standing ovation as he walked off the field, which was interesting. But, in watching the game, I really didn't quite understand why Club America, like, I guess with about 20 minutes to go in the first half, I mean, they went in a straight-up full panic mode, as if, they had to score a goal in the last 5 minutes to save themselves. And frankly, I was surprised that the Impact didn't get two or three in the first half. I thought they had a couple of just solid chances, and if the players see their teammates, I mean, guys are walking in all alone, and then they had one where I guess the guy tried to float it into the back of the net and he missed, and I'm sitting there thinking, man, you can't do that. I mean, I know having the away goal is nice and great for them, but I mean, we saw in the second half that they just they didn't have any legs left, and the fact that Club America, I mean, they missed a bunch of chances. I mean, it was just a weird game. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not a big fan of Club America. I never have been. I do enjoy watching them play now, but it's no love lost for me, to be honest with you, watching them struggle. So I'm not going to lie. With that said, I mean, I think, the fact that they finally settled down a little bit and, they didn't leave themselves so open to the counter in the second half, and they managed the game a little better and just had some bad luck. I mean, they had some chances there. I mean, they could have, once they got the equalizer, they could have gotten a couple more in. They had a couple of really good chances there at the end. 1-1, I think, is... this is a two-legged final, and I think there's going to be goals up in Montreal. I think both teams are going to get goals in Montreal, and we'll just see what the tally is at the end to see who takes the cup. Because unless either side, particularly Club America, you know, wins, you know, 3-4-0. I think it was that would have been the only way that this final would have been decided here at the Azteca. It's not. It's going to be decided at the Olympic Stadium, as it should be. And mm-hmm. I think we have the makings of a great final. I think it's going to be fantastic. You know, America has a little game with Guadalajara that they have to play on Sunday night, and then they'll be traveling from there. It is the big rivalry in Mexico, so it's Mexico's Super Clásico. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I mean, are they going to play a reserve side? Because they still need the points in the local league to make the playoffs. So it's going to be it's definitely going to be interesting for Club America these next 6 or 7 days, because that's about a 6-hour flight, I think, up to Montreal.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, this is what kills me about a team like them. I mean, they are owned by Televisa. Charter, you know, don't fly commercial. Don't charter a plane. Make it as comfortable as possible for your players. And it would shock me if they didn't do that. I mean, it seems like it would make all the sense in the world that they would do such a thing for the team. It would make sense. Hopefully, they will. And get them there as soon as their game is over out of Guadalajara, and just fly them over to Montreal from there. But kudos to the Impact. They've had a great I know that they're struggling in the MLS, but I think they're 100% concentrated on the Champions League. They understand, not to sound corny, but the impact this would have, for their side and also for the league. So I think the fact that they've taken this this tournament so seriously and they've done such a great job in training for it, I think that it's fantastic for the league. I think it's fantastic for them. It's going to be a great final next week. I'm looking forward to it. I know there's going to be a lot of Quebecois in the crowd. It should be a good match. I think it's I think there's going to be goals scored there. And frankly, I think it's anyone's game at this point. I mean, who's going to bet against Montreal at this point?
Very true. Very, very true. Because right now, at the moment, Montreal has that advantage. You know, I have to say here, John, as the second half was going along in this matchup, I found it strange that, to me, Club America's strength was definitely in the midfield, and the midfield looked disjointed for once. I don't know why, I don't know how, but to me, it just felt like they were running out of ideas. I mean, they had the ball, they were getting the corners, they were applying pressure, but it just seemed to me they just ran out of ideas to manage the ball, or at least to find attacking options.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with, we talked that they'd gone into complete panic mode, early in the first half, and I think that kind of carried over into the second half. And America's one of those teams where there's, a lot of guys think that like that they're the ones that have to have the ball at their feet. And I mean, there were a couple of chances where, two and three guys are, they're just so anxious to try and score that they were canceling each other out. I mean, there were at some point the Impact's best defenders. But, it was something that, I think that once they took Martinez out at number 10 with, I guess that was with the Peralta sub. And then, to me, I think the guy that had the really rough night was, for Club America, was number 9, Benedetto. He just could not get anything going. His touches were not precise at all, and he was trying stuff. It just wasn't working, and I think that was a change that maybe they should have made a little earlier. And as far as the Impact, I mean, you could see that they were just by the end of the game, I mean, they were literally walking. I mean, they were having a rough time with the altitude there in Mexico City, and I think it was a shame for them that they gave up that goal. But I think that it was courageous on their part, so to speak, that they didn't let themselves get down enough to where America could have gotten a couple more there late in the match. So far as the midfield, though, for Club America, it was first of all, Ruben Sambuesa is just a fantastic player. I mean, he is just so much fun to watch on the ball, and he's one of those guys that I mean, it just amazes me that he's able to, you know, work through, you know, one, two, three guys, you know, and he's from Argentina, and those are the players that CONCACAF just cannot, we can't find guys that can do the stuff that he does. And I think that is, you know, until we get players like that, then I think that we can be a legitimate threat on an international stage. But, I mean, he was just weaving his way to defense. I mean, it was impressive. And it was, you know, he was fun to watch. But, again, like you said, I mean, they couldn't get anything going. It was disjointed. And then the chances that they did have, they were off the mark. They didn't have a good night. And, you know, good for, you know, luckily for them, Oribe finally, you know, I cannot – he amazes me on set pieces. I mean, he's not a tall guy. But he just manages. He is so good in the air, and he manages to. I mean, I saw a replay of that goal. I mean, he just, you know, was if he was you know, going up against the guy, he was, you know, he was losing 70% of that battle, and he still managed to get his head on the ball. I mean, it was just incredible the way that he was able to score. And you know, he was a guy that was injured. I think that he'll probably be. They're going to probably work his way back into where you know, he'll be playing. And let's face it, if there's one guy who's really over the years done just a phenomenal job of this tournament, it's him. And you know, that's something that he's going to definitely be a point of emphasis for Montreal Impact when they play next week up in Montreal.
Yeah, absolutely. You just got to say, though, John, this is one of those strange games that you never thought you'd ever see. I mean, I thought that Club America was going to dominate from the start. But I guess we can give credit to Frank Klopas. I mean, he did the same thing down in Pachuca. He got a 2-2 result in that first leg down in Mexico again. And then they come back to Montreal, and he gets the big 1-1 draw, of course, advantage on the away goals that got them into the semis. He gets 2-0 on Aluenza in the first leg in Montreal, and he gets a big 4-2, I believe it was like 4-3, on aggregate, but he gets the away goal advantage with the 2-0. So it's just one of those things where it's just unbelievable what you're seeing from Klopas and how he's able to get through all these hurdles, especially down there. I mean, it was really that close being 1-0 after the Azteca tonight.
No, yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, they, you know, they had a great game plan. I mean, I really think they could have gotten a couple more. I mean, they got their goal, and you know, early in the game where teams were just settling down, and you were starting to see what kind of game it was. And then from then on, I mean, they played the counterattack beautifully. It was, you know, it was a great strategy. I mean, I've seen America's coach Matosas go. He has have trouble going up against defensive teams. He doesn't really have. He's, you know, he's trying to figure out a way to break that. But you know, there were times when America was sending. I mean, I was like, you know, it's not like there's 5 minutes left in the whole tie. I mean, you know, they're in the first half and he's sending, you know, 8-9 guys forward. I'm like, dude, you're gonna. I mean, you know, losing 1-0 is not the end of the world. It's a two-legged. You know, there's two games to play, but losing 2-0. You know, at home is almost impossible. So, you know, be smart. I mean, that's what I didn't understand. And then, and credit to Klopas in Montreal. I mean, they obviously got into Club America's head quite a bit. I mean, they were playing, you know, at 100 miles an hour the whole rest of the game. And unfortunately for the Impact, especially the second half, they just could not latch on to one of those super counterattacks that they had in the first half, because I really do think in the first half they could have ended this tie by getting a couple more goals, and I hope for their sake that it doesn't end up costing them next week up in Montreal and not getting those goals or not taking full advantage of those opportunities. But yeah, I mean, I think it was a fantastic I mean, let's face it, it's not the first time or the last time we'll see teams go to Azteca and use that strategy. I mean, it's a strategy that, you know, the Mexican teams, for whatever reason, they run out of patience so fast, as, you know, especially when they're down, that they just, like I said, they go into this very they're playing the hurry up offense. When they're down 7-0, this is basically what it is. It's like they're just in such a frantic state, and once they start settling down, then I think they realize, it's going to be okay. We're going to get chances. We have to get good chances. We can't leave ourselves exposed. And I think they started doing that a little better in the second half. And needless to say, their chances started improving because they were picking their spots a lot better in the second half than they were in the first half. But it was funny to watch. I'm not going to lie. I was like, man, these guys are, it's pretty funny to see them, run around with their, like a chicken with their head cut off in the first half after that goal. So full credit to Montreal for making that happen. I think that soccer is one of those games where if you can get into your opponent's head, then that's a great thing. And Montreal definitely did that tonight.
Absolutely. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, special edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I have John Jagur right now, who covers Liga MX on Big Soccer. Very soon, hopefully, we'll have Kevin Laramie from Off the Woodwork podcast from Montreal. He is live at the Estadio Azteca as he is getting quotes from Frank Lopez and everyone over from Montreal. So hopefully when he is done as fast as possible, he will be joining us and we'll get his take on the game. John, obviously a couple of years ago, Real Salt Lake went down to Monterrey, got a 2-2 result, getting both away goals, and it was your favorite Peruvian guy and mine. I forget his name, unfortunately. But
it was Suazo.
Yes, Suazo.
Yeah.
Getting that big away goal, but it was a big aggregate goal at Rio Tinto Stadium to win it on aggregate 3-2. And at the moment right now, Montreal and Club America are at 1-1. As we've already said, it's been a great result so far for Montreal. But now here's the situation. There's going to be a sold-out Olympic Stadium, not as big as the Azteca, but I would have to assume that Club America has played in some pretty tough places within Mexico, as well as going on the road in Costa Rica for these CONCACAF Champions League group stage games, these knockout stage games. What do you think is going to be the biggest issue going to the Olympic Stadium in Montreal? Because obviously they don't have to worry about the weather. It's pretty nice out around this time. It's probably like in the low 60s at the moment up in Montreal. It will be field turf like it was in Costa Rica. What do you think Club America is thinking right now? Matosas, what do you think he's telling his players in the locker room, in the changing room, what to get ready for that second leg? We know they got to face Guadalajara on the weekend in league play. What do you think he's telling his players right now to be prepared for that second leg?
Well, as far as the crowd and everything else, Club America is the, they're kind of like the Dallas Cowboys of Liga MX in the sense that, yeah, they're a popular team, but they're also, easily the most hated team in the whole country. So they draw crowds everywhere they go. They're probably the most team that plays in front of the biggest crowds consistently away, more so than any other side in Mexico. So I don't think that the crowd is going to be that much of an issue for them at all. I think that the field turf will probably be more of an issue than anything the crowd is. One of America's slogans is "Hate me more." So, it's something that they kind of, it's something that's kind of like a point of pride for them to know that they're going to be, they're going to hostile territory. So, and as far as what Matosas is telling his players, if I were him, I would be saying, we still got, this is just halftime. Yeah, they got a goal, but there's no reason to think that we can't score there because we can. With all due respect to Alajuelense and all due respect to Pachuca, America has much better players than both of those teams. So it's not like, I'm not saying that the Impact doesn't have good players, but this is a different team that's going up to Montreal to face them. So the midfield, particularly, you know, they didn't necessarily have a good game tonight. I think they're, you know, as strong a midfield as Montreal will have faced, and it's going to be interesting to see who gets to impose their will, and who gets to play their style of game more up in Montreal, and if I always say if they can hang on to the. You know, the first 15 minutes, if they can survive that, then I think Club America, you know, as the game goes on, is going to have, you know, they're going to have plenty of chances, just as Montreal is, and it's going to be a matter of who gets those chances in, and that's what it's going to determine. You know, obviously, that's going to determine who has the iciest blood in their veins when at the moment of truth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is going to be probably one of the biggest matches Club America is going to have. I know this is the biggest match Montreal has ever had. And the funny thing is that in Canadian soccer, obviously Toronto FC went the furthest and took on Santos Laguna. And obviously we know about Santos Laguna, what they've done back in those years. And once again, they were a bridesmaid and never the bride when they faced Monterrey. How many times? Two times in a row? In the final of the CONCACAF Champions League. I mean, that was an amazing team that had Oribe Peralta. And here he is with Club America now. That goal, the equalizer, obviously, that's his sixth goal in CONCACAF Champions League play right now in this tournament by itself. I mean, he has to have at least 10, 15, maybe he has reached the 20-goal plateau in 3 to 4 consecutive CONCACAF Champions League tournaments. I mean, Oribe Peralta is just such a top player from, you know, for the times with Santos Laguna, now with Club America. He's just unbelievable.
Yeah, he's made for tournaments. You know, we were a little disappointed that he only got one goal in the World Cup, but in tournaments, I mean, he just does. He does really well, and he's one of those guys that he just never quits. I mean, he has such a great heart and such a great motor on him that he knows that he's gonna get some chances, and he knows that he's gonna miss them, and he knows that he just has to worry about the next chance if he can get it in. I mean, we saw a guy today, you know, earlier today that when he got his chance, you know, he was able to come through for Real Madrid, and I think that those two guys are so much alike. It really is amazing that they, you know, have such a completely different upbringing, yet play so similarly. You know, and Javier Hernandez and Oribe, they just have such a, you know, a similar style of play. But you know, the thing that makes them, you know, both just incredible is you know, their will to win is just phenomenal, and I think that's you know, that's one of the reasons why, frankly, you know that is a huge intangible. I mean, I don't think that there are as many players on either side that have the kind of experience that he has, and not only just playing in those games. I mean, he has excelled in those games, and that is a huge intangible to take. I mean, honestly, it wouldn't. You know, and it won't surprise you either. I mean, if it ends up 1-0 and Club America wins next week, you know, I'd say there's a 70% chance. 70% chance that goal is called by Oribe. And you wouldn't even blink an eye if I told you that, because you're like, yeah, absolutely, because that's the kind of guy he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, Andreas Romero on that tackle that led to the equalizer by Oribe Peralta, just poor decision on him. I mean, look, I understand, you know, you're playing in the Azteca, over 100,000 screaming Club America fans, you know, yelling, chanting, you know, saying every negative word from the dictionary, however you find it. And, you know, just to make that challenge so late in the match, that was very, very, very bad decision from him. He should have stayed on his feet.
The thing that I noticed, and it's obviously something that Club America noticed too, is that Montreal, they just, you know, they piss and moan about every foul to the point mm-hmm. where they get distracted. And the other team, whether it was Club America, I think that even Ed Aviano did it, they just put the ball down and go. You know, if you guys want to, you know, jack with the refs, go right ahead. We're going to keep playing. And they almost got caught a couple of times tonight doing that. And so, I mean, that's something that, I mean, I would definitely keep an eye on with Montreal. Maybe we can ask Kevin when he gets on, if that's something that they've had an issue with before. But, I mean, I definitely noticed that in the first half. And a little, I mean, it got to the point where guys that were nowhere near the play would run up to the defender and go block the ball, because, I mean, you're sitting there, you know, yakking with the ref, and they're getting ready to go, and you're completely, you know, you're not back in the game yet.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it was interesting. So that's, and I got to say one other thing that kind of surprised me is that, and obviously it could be because, you know, the legs are the first thing to go, but Kubo Medica was winning almost every header, which really surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that really surprised
me. Oh, absolutely.
And I think, you know, again, that's another, you know, if Montreal's putting the list together, you know, what we need to work on to, you know, in order to have success, those are two gigantic red flags right there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think when you're playing in your first ever championship final, and whether it's a single match or it's a two-legged final, it doesn't really matter, but still, you got to find a way to ignore whatever the referee is doing. I mean, look, Montreal felt that the calls were not going their way. Fine. Just drop the ball, play on, and just ignore the situation. Just go out there and just play your game. I mean, I think this is what happens sometimes when you have a team that does not normally get to finals of a international cup competition or just any cup competition, whether it's domestic or international. They have to find a way to ignore the referee. I mean, look, it's tough to see sometimes what happens. Obviously, you've seen it with your side. You know, why did the referee call this foul? Why didn't he call that foul? But you're correct there, John. They just got to just take the ball, put it down, and go forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the game, so just, you know, it may have been a bad call, but those happen. You know, it's just move on. And, yeah, they almost got caught out a few times, which was a little,
mm-hmm.
little worrisome for them.
Yeah, it really, really was. John, let me ask you this question. Obviously, you know, right now, the CONCACAF Champions League, we've always mentioned this all the time, that this tournament has helped the national teams of every country within CONCACAF, whether it's Canada, the U.S., and the North Zone. We know Mexico does everything well within themselves. The countries that go in Central America, it looks like the Caribbean is starting to pick that up now. And my only question is this. Do you think maybe they should change the scheduling for the group stage games and then the knockout stage, kind of like starting off 2014 around March, April for the group stage, and then when you get to the knockout, maybe around September, October, November? I mean, do you think that would be a better way, or do you think at the moment this is going to stay the way it is?
No, I think the way they have it is fine, because you know, the whole, you know, everybody plays the same schedule except for one country, and so I don't think there is a point of, now one thing where I do have an issue with is you know, Canada needs to have their own league.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and to me it makes no sense to me that you know, if you're a Canadian MLS team, that you get, just because you're in Canada, you get an audit. You know, that's ridiculous to me. You know, I think that Canada needs to have, they need to have their own league. You know, I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If they're going to play soccer professionally and play in this tournament, then the team needs to come from a Canadian league, not an American league. That's just my own personal opinion. You know, Canada's not Wales, so.
Canada's not Wales, which is very true. Canada is definitely not Wales, that's for sure. I mean, I think one, and I'll agree with you on that, and I think here's the counter argument, and this is, I'm just throwing this out there, obviously, is that I think the CSA needs to be a lot more organized for, if they're going to have that spot in the Champions League, if they're going to start their own league. I mean, obviously the Canadian Soccer League that they had up there, which was amateur teams, I guess, at the that's what it was, which is no longer around because of the – I don't know if you heard about that betting scandal that they had. They had somewhere in Asia – they had people actually betting on Canadian Soccer League games, and there were several players that were actually match fixing.
Yeah, no, I mean that. Yeah, I understand, but what I'm saying is that the Canadian Soccer Association, I mean, they gotta get their own league going, and they've gotta play in Edmonton and Winnipeg and Thunder Bay and they just have to have their own league. It makes no sense to me. And if they don't have their league, then you know what? Then your teams don't get to participate. I mean, it's just as simple as that.
Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing it. We'll see what happens, obviously, down the road. But at the moment, you got three Canadian teams in MLS. You got two Canadian teams in the second division in the United States in the North American Soccer League. There's a couple of PDL teams right now from Canada. I think there's one in Winnipeg, and there's a couple from Toronto. Maybe one or two in Toronto or in the Ontario province. But, you know, we'll see what happens. You know how this confederation goes, John. You know how some of these North Zone countries go with their their federations for the game in each country. You know, wishful thinking. We'll see what happens, you know?
No, yeah. I mean, obviously it's something, that's years down the road. But, at the very least, if they're going to be playing in the tournament, then, I don't think they should get an automatic spot, because I don't think they've earned it. I think that they, if they're going to do it, then let them play it in with, the third Costa Rican team or the third Honduran, what I'm saying? Let them, and then if they get that, then I'm totally fine with it. Until they get their own league, I'm cool with that. But at this point, they need I just don't think that a Canadian team should get an automatic bid when they don't have a league. That's just my only issue.
No, that's fine. Look, your opinion, obviously, and that's how you feel. That's how you feel. I mean, there's nothing, nothing anyone else can say. And if that's how you feel, that's how you feel. Of course, we are still waiting for Kevin Laramie to join us. Hopefully, the connection is going to be solid here. And was fine.
Let me tell you from experience that if he doesn't call in tonight, don't be surprised, because that place is a hell pit to try and get out of. So,
oh God,
especially after a big game, yeah, he's going to be there for a couple hours.
Uh-oh, it looks like Kevin's in trouble. But we'll see what happens.
Trouble.
Hopefully,
let me tell you this way. The only other time I've ever had a hard time, as hard a time was getting out of Ohio Stadium in Columbus. I mean, it's 100,000 people, and there's no parking. There's no parking lots. It's just a huge mess.
Right.
And so it's. He's gonna have and we had a police escort, and we still took us 2.5 hours to get out of there. So.
Oh, geez, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God! I have to say this, John. When Kick TV they showed the road trip to the Estadio Azteca, yeah, you ain't kidding about those police escorts, boy. I tell you, that's really, really crazy what the visiting U.S. fans had to do just to get to see the U.S. national team play against Mexico, and that long. I mean, you're seeing like maybe three major arteries of highway in Mexico City, either going downtown or getting to the stadium, all blocked off, just for the freaking bus to get down there. That is crazy.
Yep.
That is absolutely crazy, definitely. Well, once again, everyone, this is the 40 Teams Fire American Soccer Show, special Scotiabank CONCACAF Champions League final first leg review show. Once again, I have John Jagu with us. Hopefully we will get Kevin Laramie on talking about Montreal side of things. Once again, it's a 1-1 draw. Montreal does get the away goal from Piatti, who converted that chance in the 16th minute by Ignacio Piatti. And then, of course, a big-time booking on Andreas Romero in the 88th minute. On a foul, on a, I would say, a not really a well-timed challenge, but setting up the free kick right to Oribe Peralta, who converts it off of his noggin, his sixth goal in the Scotiabank CONCACAF Champions League, the equalizer in the 89th minute, and we have a 1-1 aggregate with a one-goal advantage on away goals for Montreal. And once again, the match The second leg will be live on Fox Sports 2, as well as Unimas or Univision, any one of the channels, next Wednesday, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. Montreal will be hosting Club America at the Olympic Stadium at the Big O in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Big moment for Canadian soccer in this one, especially another great moment for Mexican football, as once again a spot in the FIFA Club World Cup tournament is on the line this coming December. Once again, I think in Morocco will be the tournament, and of course the last club from Mexico to be involved in this is of course Cruz Azul, and I thought they had a decent tournament last December, but this year obviously it's going to be either Club America from Mexico or Montreal Impact from Canada, John, that will take that spot. What do you think about the Club World Cup so far? Do you think it has gotten better? Has it gotten worse, or it's the same?
No, I think it's about the same. I think it's about the, you know, what you could expect from it. You know, I like the fact that they, you know, don't bring in the South American team or the European team into the semifinals, because frankly, they don't need to be wasting their time playing the Oceania team and, you know, et cetera. But one thing I would like to see, though, is that I wouldn't mind seeing it rotate from confederation to confederation. I know that Morocco has it for a few. I know they've played it in Dubai. I'd love to see it played. And, you know, this is where having the Caribbean in your confederation, I think, you know, works to your advantage. I mean, this would be a great tournament to play in. You know, like the Bahamas, you know, a place that, you know, what fans would want to go to. You know, I mean, you know, who wants to go to Tokyo in December, seriously, in December and freeze? You know, why not play it in Cancun? You know, let's play it in Cancun. Let's play it in, you know, let's play it in Brazil, you know, up in the north coast of some of those beautiful beach towns, or you know, let's play it down, you know, in the Caribbean somewhere. Let's play it in Florida. You know, let's play it in the States. Mm-hmm. Let's play it in Miami. You know, that would be fantastic. So I wouldn't mind seeing that tournament move around a little more. But again, I think the format is great, and I do like the fact that they allow the local team, you know, whoever won their championship to be part of the tournament, you know, and let them have a playoff to see if they can advance. I think that's great. I think that's definitely the way to do it.
Oh, so absolutely, I agree.
Yeah, I think the format's great. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I wrote about this in Soccer Newsday, actually, because I was thinking it would be great to see the United States having the Club World Cup from FIFA. And I mean, the only problem would be you're going to have to talk to the National Football League, because they, of course, control the scheduling. And the schedule just came out, obviously, yesterday for all 32 teams in the National Football League. And if you're going to have it in Florida, let's say, and let's just say for the heck of it, you're going to have it in Miami over at where the Dolphins play, and you're also going to have it at Everbank Field over in Jacksonville where the Jaguars are. You're going to have to somehow, in December, I would think, you're going to have to convolute the schedule a little bit just so that, you know, these teams are going to be on the road maybe two or three straight weeks, and they can't practice.
Oh,
so they're
on
practice facility, obviously.
I mean, it's not like the soccer players are going to tear up the field. I mean,
No, not that. Oh, obviously,
yeah,
no, I'm not saying
that.
I don't
think they have a problem.
No, I don't think they have a problem either. All I'm saying is like the NFL is going to have to give the Dolphins and the Jaguars another two or three consecutive road games just for the markings, just to get rid of the grid lines so they can have
right.
the field markings done. That's all I'm saying. Not to ruin the field. We know that. That's not going to happen. I'm just saying,
no, they would,
you know,
probably,
get rid of
yeah, just to kind of, you know, either re-solder, like you said, just let it, or they would probably actually re-solder. It wouldn't surprise me at
mm-hmm.
all if they did that.
Yeah.
And hopefully they would do a better job than what they did in San Antonio last week.
I'm still not happy about it. I know you're not happy about it. That was just an – see, I don't know if you remember this or not, but Giant Stadium, and I don't know if we talked about it or not, they used to have these trays, these giant grass trays that they just – you know, you slide it in, and if one tray was terrible, all you had to do was, like, pull it out and just put in a new one. I mean, that's what they probably should have done in San Antonio if they had – the trade system's still around. But then again, we don't know. But that was a – yeah, I agree with you. That was a complete debacle having the Alamo Dome. Now, what was it? Because the concrete was cold and the grass just couldn't stay warm enough to look good?
Well, is that what they said? Because I think it was just because it was just poorly – I mean, I had buddies that were working the game, and they're like – they just – there was – you know, they didn't put anything between the sod and the concrete. It was just a big blob. There was nothing there. It was a big mess.
Yeah. Yeah, that is still going to be a big mess over there, I swear to God. But I'll tell you right now, all I hope is that if Toyota Field, where the Scorpions play in the NESL, if they can just make the attendance a lot bigger and add another deck here or there, you can host USA Mexico there instead of going to.
Yeah, you can also host it at the Cotton Bowl or at.
That's true.
At Reliant or at Kyle Field or at UT. I mean, there's plenty of places they could host that game if they're going to play in Texas. There are plenty of stadiums that can handle that game. But you're right though. It would be you know, Florida would be ideal, and you know, there's the Citrus Bowl in Florida, which doesn't get any action, so to speak, because there's no pro teams to play there. So, you know, that's certainly a field that would be available to
actually, yeah, Orlando City plays there.
Well, that's what I mean. But they don't play there. They don't play there in December. So.
No. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's,
and here's
so
the thing about that, though. Yeah, no, that's true. And here's the other thing about that, though. Can you believe this? They put field turf in the Citrus Bowl.
Oh, my God.
They put field turf in the Citrus Bowl. I mean, you got Raymond James that's got natural – Jacksonville, natural. Raymond James Stadium, of course, is in Tampa Bay, Tampa. Miami, it's natural grass. I mean, only in Orlando Citrus Bowl. Now, I understand why, because I get the two bowl games they're going to have there, because UCF, University of Central Florida, has their own stadium now. They play college football there. But, yeah,
right,
it makes no sense.
There.
Why is that field turf? It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make any sense to me why that would be field turf. But
yeah,
maybe it's because they're using it more, and I guess the upkeep is less or something. I have no idea, but that's kind of ridiculous.
I think it's called laziness, but that's just me. But that's okay.
Well, it's financially lazy. It's called saving a buck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what that's called. Oh, we got to use the stadium during the summer. Well, we're not going to keep it watered. Oh no. So we'll just use this stuff.
And by the way, the lake is not far away on one of the other sides of the end zones, actually. You know what the funny thing is? The East-West Expressway is, I think it is on the western side of the stadium. And on the east side is a big lake. There's that big lake with that famous fountain, that domed fountain over there. And, you know, it's just one of those things where like you said, you know, don't understand why you can't put natural grass back in there. It used to be natural grass. Now it's a field turf. It's just ridiculous stuff. What are we going to do?
They use it more. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you know, there's other options. I mean, they could certainly play at the Rose Bowl or at the Colwag, actually, no, because they use that for. But if it's in December, though, yeah, they could totally. There's plenty of places. I mean, the U.S. would be a great spot. You know, Costa Rica would be great. I think Costa Rica would be a wonderful host for an event like this. You know, that way they'd have to use, you know, I would even, I mean, it, just to give the European, the South American a little taste of what we have to deal with, you know, playing at the Cuscatlan. I mean, that is, you know, that's like the, you know, that is one of the hardest places to play. And if, you know, I imagine, you know, Boca Juniors going up against the Salvadorian team in that game, you know, they'd probably end up winning it, but I guarantee you it'd be a great game. Just because the crowd would be so into it. So, yeah, I mean, that's my one qualm with that tournament is that, you know, we need to, you know, play it somewhere for 2 years and then rotate it and then open up the bidding and let other countries bid on it. You know, I mean, that'd be a great place, you know, for Cairo, you know, in Egypt to play that or down in like Hong Kong or, you know, there's so many options. Because you only need one stadium, so it's not like you're.
Yeah, you know,
it's not
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, like you said before, the Rose Bowl, the Olympic Stadium in Los Angeles and Pasadena, those are great places. Like we've already said, Texas, there's plenty of stadiums in Texas that you can have in this game. Like we've mentioned, the Cotton Bowl, Reliance Stadium in Houston, Cotton Bowl in Dallas, University of Texas Stadium. Obviously, it would be a great thing to see something like that. And like I said, as well, you know, Miami, Jacksonville, Tampa, you can have it there as well. The only thing is you're just going to have the NFL give those teams a couple of consecutive road games, three consecutive road games or less, just to redo the markings and or just resod the field. So that would be a great opportunity for the United States and for the U.S. Soccer Federation to have it there. Of course, there's plenty of places to have the Club World Cup in Mexico as well, not just in the Azteca. I mean, obviously, was it the Jalisco as well that's a place to have it?
Yeah,
or,
you know, the new stadium in Guadalajara would be great, the OmniLife in Cancun. I mean, you know, although they're not in the first division anymore. But, yeah, there's going to be a new stadium in Monterrey that's going to come online, I think, this summer in August. So, yeah, there's definitely places. You know, Costa Rica would be good. I mean, you could even play it up in Montreal. I'm sure they would love it.
Right.
Play
yep,
at the Olympics.
Absolutely.
Now, I forget, do the Alouettes play there?
In Montreal, sometimes I think they do. I think they might have their own, I think they're making their own stadium, I think. I think it might have gone through. For Canadian Football League, they probably do play there. I can double check real quick for you. And Kevin has a signal, so he's about to call us.
There you go.
He finally got a signal. I gave him the phone number. He's ready to call in, and we shall see if we can get him on. Yes, there he is, with the touch of a button. It's
Hello,
Kevin Laramie, all the way from the Estadio Azteca. Kevin, so we only have like 13 minutes remaining. Kevin, how did you like the game? What did you think from your vantage point?
First of all, I just want to say if I could add it because it's the Wi-Fi. I think it's probably the worst Wi-Fi I've ever seen. 1-1 game, Daniel. Incredible night. But you're getting much to lead until the 8th and 9th minute. I would have never believed you. I would have called you crazy.
Really?
Exactly. It was a very, very hard game. It was hard fought.
Mhm. I bet it was.
Exactly.
I really bet it was.
I know the red card. Well, the yellow card that was supposed to be a red card. 44th minute, first half. A call that's one of the worst calls I've ever seen. To be honest, it was a blatant last defender fall. And if not that, the tackle was hard enough to be a straight red. And on both cases, the referee was right there. He saw it and just gave a yellow. He called a foul, but just didn't reach for the right card. And that's unacceptable. And yes, we're in CONCACAF. We heard about the CONCACAF and everything, but so.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, Kevin, you know, this is what you have to expect sometimes in a final. I mean, I agree that maybe there are times you think a card should be pulled out and it's the wrong color, maybe. But still, this is the CONCACAF Champions League, and sometimes, even you know, Kevin, in the Stanley Cup playoffs, sometimes when you're expecting a penalty, it doesn't come, and the referee is just swallowing the whistle. So it's just one of those moments where, Kevin, you just got to, unfortunately, got to just, you know, got to play on as much as you can. But besides that, Montreal, it looked like they got tired towards the end of the match. Obviously, they're playing in not just altitude, but other things going on as well. But still, how did you feel towards the end of the match, even though it ended 1-1? What were the most proud things you are to see how Montreal played?
I just finished talking with Dominic Augereau and asked him if the altitude was a factor. At the beginning, he answered no. But he thought for a second, and he said, yes, the altitude was a little factor, the 5-6 minutes at the end, and they were keeping up with the pace, and that's where they got burned at the 89th minute, Oribe Peralta with the equalizer. But I have to say, the contact on Bush at the end, and right after the goal, there was contact on Bush, and Bush got the yellow. Will not be playing the final in Montreal. He had a yellow card against Pachuca, and with yellow card accumulation, he will not be present at the final in Montreal. And like in the words of, later on you can hear on my Off the Woodworks and Two Solitudes podcast, on the words of Becky Sumare, he really feels for Evan Bush, a player that's been battling hard for Montreal since 2011, back in the NASL days, been sticking with the club since then, and now the biggest moment of the club, and unfortunately because of the bad call of the referee, he will miss the last game of the CONCACAF Champions League 2014-2015.
John, I don't know if you can comment or not. I thought that all yellows after the semifinals were wiped out unless I missed something. I thought all yellows from quarters and semis were wiped out and everyone was fresh starting the final. Am I mistaken?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at the rule book, the tournament rules, what it officially is. But I want to say I think Kevin's right. I think that if I think that he probably will. I mean, I would assume that they would. I mean, Kevin, did you get that information from the club itself? I mean, if the club itself, if that's what they told them, then that's what it's going to be.
Yeah,
the play on that breakaway that should have been red. I mean, that was, you know, that thing should have been a black card. It was so red. It was pretty chalking. And I know exactly why, and we all know exactly why I didn't get pulled. One, it was final. Two, if that was the Montreal player where that happened, or if it was a Club America player in Montreal, then that would have been red. But the refs have a really hard time giving reds to the home team in situations like that. And it is what it is.
No, I agree 100% with you, John. And the one that was really surprising here, the players were talking about it. That call, even if it wasn't the last defender, even if it was just a hard tackle, it was still deserving of a straight red. That's what we don't get. We're talking the journalists together. We're like, it doesn't make sense. It should have been a red card, but I can give you why that card was a yellow.
You know, one thing that I was noticing, Kevin, and mm-hmm. we talked about it before you got on the air, was when every time Montreal would get called for a foul, they just their talk back to the ref almost got them in trouble because they just wouldn't take themselves out of the game and argue with the ref, and America would set the ball down and they would just go, and it almost cost them a few times. I was wondering if that's something that is normal for the Impact, or is that just something that just happened tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't tell you the answer to that, John. I really couldn't. But to be honest, yeah, it was a goal at the end, but an MLS team club, and at Estadio Azteca in the finals of the CONCACAF Champions League. Like a lot of players told me after the game, if you would have told them that at the beginning of the game, they would sign for it. They would have taken it right away. But because of the goal at the end, it still feels like missed opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely there, Kevin. Just looking on Twitter right now that, yes, it's official that Evan Bush is going to be suspended for the second leg next Wednesday, but apparently the Impact are going to appeal the yellow card. They're going to contact CONCACAF, and they're going to try and see if they can appeal that booking to have Evan Bush in net for the second leg. Obviously, they have on loan FC Edmonton keeper, a backup, because I believe they have a keeper who is not available. They have Kronberg, exactly. They have Kronberg.
Kronberg
and he
is Kansas City?
Cap-tied, yep. He's cap-tied, and you have and your third stringer's injured, and you're borrowing on loan FC Edmonton's keeper right now.
Yeah. Earlier in the season, we had the Indy 11 backup keeper, Christian Mitch, from Germany, who were able to be with Montreal for a two loan stint. And because the NFL season has started, he is back in the 11, but John Smith will be with the team, but I wouldn't be surprised if I would maybe get another keeper for that game next week.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens. Hey, listen, Kevin, get back to your hotel room safe and sound. I'll talk to you when you get back from Mexico City. So, listen, thanks a lot for calling in, and I'll talk to you soon, okay? I think that
I think
the end of that.
Okay.
yep, there it is. Okay, so Kevin is no longer with us, but that's okay. I want him to get back to his hotel room safe and sound, obviously. John knows all about Mexico City traffic, so that's why I want Kevin Laramie to get back. And I just want to say thanks, Kevin, for contacting us from the Azteca. And we will make sure that he will be safe and sound, everyone in Montreal. But obviously that is the one big talking point. Club America should have been down to 10 men on a straight red, last man pulling down Dominic Aduro there, John. But it is what it is, unfortunately. And
yeah, you know, I mean, like I said, you know, if that would have happened in Montreal, then I think the Medica guy gets the red. If it's an impact player doing it, the Azteca, he gets the red. But if it's an impact guy doing that in Montreal, then it's yellow. And you can say CONCACAF ref all you want. That happens here. That happens in Europe. It happens all over the world. That's just
exactly
the ref. The refs don't want to get on the bad side of the fans so early in the match. It just they just don't want to do it.
Yeah,
you know, and
that's very very true.
Yeah, I mean it's you know it's just but yeah, it should, you know, if they follow the rules as they should, it should have been a red. But you know, I mean, when he pulled the yellow out, it didn't surprise me at all. And frankly,
nope,
it wasn't that hard to challenge. He was just tugging on his shirt, so it wasn't that hard to challenge.
No,
on his shirt. But yep, it was a play on goal, and he was the last man. I mean, the rule says that's a red. He should have gotten a red. I mean, he can, you know, it could be the lightest foul in the world, but you know, it's you know, play on goal, last man. It's an automatic red, and that's it. But the ref showed clemency. He got the governor called at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
And said, no, it's a yellow.
I mean, you just got to say that, you know, this is a high-profile match, obviously. It's a two-leg series. And the referee, he probably, by the laws of the game, should have gone to his back pocket and showed the red card. He didn't. He showed a little leniency, and unfortunately, that's what it is. We're going to have to live with it. Everyone in Montreal is going to have to live with it. And the only way Montreal is going to have to show that what should have been a red became a yellow, they're just going to have to go out at the Olympic Stadium and win it on Canadian soil. That's the only way you're going to have to reverse any negativity in that setup.
No, you're absolutely right. It's you know, and then now with, you know, with them not having their goalkeeper, I mean, I'll they'll probably win the, although, you know, I mean, I saw the play. I mean, he was you know, again, I'm not going to speculate one way or the other, but I mean, I rarely have I seen yellow cards overturned, you know, on appeal.
Yeah.
And when they had video of the guy you know, jacking with the Mexican player, then they're going to go, look, he wasn't innocent. You know, you can say all you want. So I don't think he's going to play, but that's just me.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens, obviously. If the appeal will go through or it won't go through, we'll just have to wait on CONCACAF's website to see what's going to happen. By the way, John, just for you, they're not playing anymore at the Olympic Stadium. It's called Percival Molson Memorial Stadium. Obviously, Molson is the Canadian beer company. So, and it's named after the gentleman. So they built the new stadium for the Montreal Alouettes for that purpose, brand new Canadian Football League stadium. So there you have it right there.
Well, good for the Alouette. Yeah, they,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Olympic Stadium it's like falling apart, isn't it? I mean, it's,
mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't it like the Astrodome? And as far as, well, maybe not so bad, but I mean, I mean, they don't use it, but for I guess, just the Impact, and that's it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, it's only used by the Impact when the early season gets underway, when the opening season gets underway in MLS, and then when it gets a lot better and a lot warmer, then they go to their regular home at the Stade Saputo, Saputo Stadium, Joey Saputo's baby. By the way, John, as we're going to wrap it up here very soon, I forget to ask you this because I know you always talk about my Jets. You're a Cowboys fan or no?
Yeah,
because our teams are going to face each other in late December on the 19th on a Saturday night at 8:25.
That is the game that's causing my high school football.
Really?
Yeah.
I read that. I didn't know that was your high school. Oh my god.
Yeah. Well, it's a tournament that I work.
Oh no.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's gonna. I don't know what they're probably gonna having to play that at the Alamo Dome, which is actually better for me because I get to go home. But
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's that's going to be, you know, the Cowboys for, I've always thought, you know, especially when Jimmy left, they're like the Jets of the NFC.
Yeah.
the heartbreak on both sides is, I mean, they both have found numerous and very descriptive and colorful ways to lose. It is quite amazing.
It really, really is. John, listen, thank you so much for joining me tonight live postgame of this first leg final in the Scotiabank CONCACAF Champions League. I'll talk to you about the setup for the second leg show. It's probably going to be on Friday because MLS messed me up. I have to cover the Red Bull game. They moved it from late July to this coming Wednesday. I'll be able to DVR it, and hopefully we'll have a review show on Friday. Is that okay? Next
sure.
Friday? All
yeah,
right.
That's
thank
fine.
You very much, John.
All right.
All right. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you next Friday.
All right, Daniel. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks to John Jagu, of course, from Big Soccer. Thanks to Kevin Laramie for the couple of moments there coming from Mexico City. And all I can say is, ladies and gentlemen, please listen again next week. Three big shows as well. Champions League second leg final review will be next Friday on May 1st. Once again, for John Jagu, Kevin Laramie, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. As always, enjoy your football. Thank you, and talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.